intricate, atmospheric, and spellbinding, all words used to describe The Woman in the Window, an eagerly anticipated literary debut, a Rear Window expertly, thrillingly reimagined for our time, with comparisons being drawn to publishing events like Gone Girl and The Girl on the Train. The book is a page-turner. It is The Woman in the Window, and it's a great pleasure to welcome A.J. Finn to the roundtable this morning. A.J., thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for hosting me.
This book has a lot of buzz. When did you start to get excited about its release?
We submitted the manuscript to publishers in September of 2016. I'd started writing it exactly a year earlier, and I had no ambitions beyond completing the book. I would have considered it an accomplishment just to be able to type the end at the conclusion of the manuscript. And it was within 48 hours of submission that we started fielding offers from publishers around the world. And within a couple of months, we had sold the book in 38 territories, which we believe represents a record for a debut novel. And amidst all that, the film rights were preemptively bought by Fox. They skipped the option altogether. So quite quickly after submission, I thought, people seem to be reacting to this. It appears to have struck a chord. And in the 15 months since, the buzz has ballooned, I think. My publisher's done a terrific job banging the drum. The same goes for my international publishers. And it all culminated in the release on January 2nd, which saw the book hit the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list. That's the first time since 2006 that a debut novel has managed to pull off that feat. So I'm pinching myself black and blue.
Okay. So how does that happen in the sense of, let's talk about what the book is about. And the fact is that audiences, readers, we love this stuff. And I assume as a writer, you love this stuff. And when it came to writing your debut, this is the kind of stuff that you wanted to write about.
Sure. So to set the scene, The Woman in the Window is Rear Window for the 21st century. Our protagonist, Anna Fox, was once a respected child psychologist, but now, aggrieved by some unspecified trauma, she's become a proper agoraphobe. She literally cannot leave her Harlem brownstone. So she idles away her time online, playing chess, learning French, communing with fellow agoraphobes as a counselor of sorts. She self-medicates, as one might do in such circumstances, with pills and booze. She watches a lot of black and white films. They form sort of a soundtrack to her life. And crucially, she enjoys, or at least assiduously spies, on her neighbors. And this catalyzes the action. One night, whilst peering into the windows of a home across the park, she thinks she witnesses what appears to be a violent act. But being an agoraphobe, she can't set foot outside to investigate, nor can she persuade anyone to believe her, including the police. And as the narrative unfolds, Anna starts to call into question whether, in fact, she saw anything at all. So this story obviously shares DNA with Hitchcock's Rear Window, one of my favorite films, and a movie that has inspired a lot of stories on both page and screen, from The Girl on the Train to Body Double. I was in my apartment one night in 2015, parked on my sofa watching the movie, when I clocked a light in my peripheral vision. It was my neighbor across the street in my Manhattan neighborhood switching on a living room lamp. And in accordance with my New York City custom, I spied on her and watched as she settled herself in her armchair and aimed a remote at her TV. And behind me, on my own TV screen, Thelma Ritter was chiding Jimmy Stewart. She said, and I'm paraphrasing here, "Don't spy on Raymond Burr. You're just asking for trouble." And I thought to myself, how funny that 60 years on, I'm doing the exact same thing Jimmy Stewart did. Voyeurism dies hard. It's timelessly, almost primally appealing to us, I think, because as human beings, we are wired to feel curious about our environments and about those who inhabit them. So that's when the idea for this story took root and began to take shape. It was buttressed by this lifelong love affair of mine with suspense storytelling in books and in films. I gorged myself on detective fiction as a kid, from Agatha Christie to Sherlock Holmes to The Hardy Boys, and then as a teenager, around the same time I got into classic movies, I dove headfirst into Patricia Highsmith, who in her novels like The Talented Mr. Ripley and Strangers on a Train helped pioneer the genre we now term psychological suspense. Then I went up to Oxford as a doctoral student to focus on crime fiction. And finally, I launched a career in publishing, focusing on mystery. So The Woman in the Window, to a significant extent, represents the culmination of this life of crime I've led.
The fascinating thing about your connection to Anna Fox, who's 38 years old, as you mentioned, lives alone in this uptown Manhattan home. She is spying on the neighbors. She's also watching a ton of black and white movie classics. There is Strangers on a Train. You mentioned the film version, which was also a Hitchcock film. Rebecca, Gaslight, Spellbound. These are all our favorites. And that just gives the book its feel, too, doesn't it?
That was my hope. The liberal citation of these classic and a few not-so-classic movies serves a dual purpose. As you point out, it enhances the atmosphere. It lends an ambiance, a menacing mood. It forms a soundtrack to her life and to this story. And on another level, it serves a narrative purpose. The reader is invited to wonder whether I'm name-checking a particular film so as to provide a clue as to the direction the story might be taking, or so as to drag a red herring across their path. So, for example, I mentioned Gaslight. The reader might wonder, is the author trying to suggest that someone is gaslighting Anna, or is this just a bit of misdirection?
So give me a sense as to when you look at this novel, it also has an English sensibility to it, doesn't it? I mean, it does seem to, yes, it's an American novel, but it also does seem to have that British mystery element to it.
I'm pleased to hear you say that. As noted, I read a lot of English mysteries as a kid, Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes, and I loved Ruth Rendell, P.D. James, these grand dames of British suspense storytelling. I also spent 10 years, the bulk of my adult life, in England, living in Oxford and later London, where I worked in British publishing. So I'm absolutely receptive to such comparisons. It's a book with a certain reserve, not an emotional reserve. I like to think that the book is actually emotionally rich and inviting. But in terms of plot, there's not much violence. There's very little graphic content. It isn't lurid. I wanted to shy away from the pyrotechnics of American serial killer thrillers. I wanted the story to be more psychologically credible, I think. I enjoy a good serial killer thriller, but let's be honest. They're seldom remotely plausible and seldom relatable. That's because most of us, the vast majority, will never have to encounter a serial killer, which is, of course, a very good thing. That said, more of us can probably relate to some sort of single crisis or confusion or misunderstanding or event. So there's not over much bloodshed in The Woman in the Window, but there is a lot for the reader to chew on. And I think hews pretty closely to the British tradition.
I got a copy of this book some time ago, and I was trying to find information out about you, and there isn't a ton out there. And then I realized that this is you're using a pseudonym. So what is it about putting out a book like this in a debut, using a pseudonym? You're in the publishing industry, and saying, because there's just a mystery in that, isn't there? I mean, that sets a tone, too.
Yes. Certainly at the point of submission. So because I worked in the publishing industry until the end of December when I retired to become a full-time writer, I did not want to put my finger on the scale. If I'd slapped my own name on the manuscript, odds were excellent that editors around New York and elsewhere would recognize that name and possibly offer on the book because they knew me, more likely not offer on the book because they knew me. And I wanted to dispense with that. I wanted the manuscript to be judged on its own merits or lack thereof. We stuck with the pseudonym because I worked in publishing, as noted, and I thought it would be disconcerting for the authors whom I published to wander into a bookstore and see their editor's name writ large across the hardback. And finally, and most importantly for me, I'm actually quite an intensely private person under my real name. As A.J. Finn, I feel able to speak about virtually anything. It helps me organize myself psychologically, and it sort of emboldens me. I find the pseudonym liberating.
The other thing that played with my mind, and I don't know why, maybe you know this better, I'm sure you do, which is the fact that I, as a reader, in reading this novel from start to finish, did not know whether you were male or female.
Ah, you know, it's not something I've sought to hide. If you Google me, I am there in all my stubbly glory. My ugly mug is played across my yeah. social media accounts, across Amazon. But I'm fine with readers not knowing whether I'm male or female. In particular, I'm keen to discourage that speculation. One of the things I like about a gender-neutral pseudonym, and again, I'm not trying to hide my maleness, is that I think it discourages speculation. I don't want readers to impute to me any characteristics, male or female. I don't want them to focus on me. That's why my author bio is necessarily brief. The reader is reading my novel, not my memoir. And perhaps I'm overthinking this, but this is certainly how I feel about the authors whose work I read. I'm not particularly interested in the author's life story. I want to read the content of their book. It's for this same reason that I'm not really one to watch the behind-the-scenes footage of favorite films. I want to appreciate the final product.
But as you know, of course, that the best way to learn about an author, the best way to learn the inner workings of an author's mind is to read their novels.
This is absolutely the case, and I poured a lot of myself into this book, not merely my lifelong obsession with classic cinema and crime storytelling, but also some mental health issues. Anna, as noted, is recovering from some sort of trauma, and she is struggling with depression. I was diagnosed with severe clinical depression when I was 21 years old. This was in 2001. And for the next 15 years, resorted to pretty much every treatment imaginable in combating it. And nothing proved lastingly fruitful until summer of 2015, when I consulted a psychiatrist, and he suggested that, in fact, I wasn't suffering from unipolar depression this whole time. I had a form of bipolar disorder, bipolar 2, wherein the highs are not so dizzying. We're not talking Carrie and Homeland. But the lows are lower and more enduring. And within a few weeks, I felt significantly improved on my new medication. And this was around the time I spied on my neighbor in her apartment across the street. And so this character strode into my brain and collided neatly with the story that was taking shape in my mind. And I felt grateful for that collision. I wanted to write something with more on its mind and in its heart than your average psychological thriller. I've read a lot of these books over the years, and most of them are crossword puzzles. They're briefly diverting, and you complete them, and you dispose of them, and you forget about them. I wanted to write in the tradition of contemporary authors whom I love, like Gillian Flynn and Kate Atkinson and Tana French. I wanted to create a story with substance, with some sort of emotional resonance. And in exploring the issues I've faced, I found a way to do that. And the book it's not a treatise on depression. It is a thriller. But I'd like to think it's a thriller with brains and heart.
Well, it is, and it's a beautiful novel. It is called The Woman in the Window, and it is just a great debut. A.J. Finn is the author. The book is out now from Morrow. Thank you very much for being with us. Congratulations, and I look forward to having you back for the next work of fiction.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Again, A.J. Finn is the author of The Woman in the Window. It is published by Morrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.